Kalisto, the last time you went at it alone, you became the United States champion. What can we expect from you on SmackDown Live?
Well, hey, I'm here, like I said before, I'm here to shock the world. I'm ready. I'm ready to show my lucha art inside and outside the ring. But first of all, I can't stop thinking about Baron Corbin being on SmackDown. I get to have my revenge. ¿Sabes qué? Hey, like I said, I'm here to stay and make a
It was at this moment that he knew he fucked up.
A good lucha thing. God damn! Woo!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 451 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. Here it is, Saturday, July 23rd, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. I want to take a moment to send my condolences to the friends and family of Anthony Metrano. He wrestled as AJ Metrano, Italy's greatest athlete for the big-time wrestling promotion. He passed away this week, only 29 years old. He'd been battling leukemia. The type of leukemia he had was actually the same exact one my mother had, so I'm very familiar with the effects of ALL. And I just want to say how sorry I am to hear of his passing. From everything I've read, he was a really good dude, and it sucks what happened to him. We're going to get into full thoughts on the WWE draft. I've got battleground predictions, and I'm going to talk about this ridiculous lawsuit that was filed against WWE this week. Before we get into all that, though, I want to say thank you to everybody who has been using and circulating our Audible link to help out the podcast, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. The offer still stands for listeners of this show who want to sample the Audible service for 30 days. You can try it out. You got to sign up using our link, and when you do so, you get one free audio book that you get to cash in on. And there's a ton of wrestling books on there. It doesn't have to be a wrestling book, but if you want, they've got Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar, Daniel Bryan, Hulk Hogan, narrated by himself. The Daniel Bryan book, in fact, is narrated by himself. I believe both of JTG's books, which are hilarious and frightening, all at the same time. Those are up there as well. So audibletrial.com/solidmonster. You got to go through the sign-up process first, then you can cash in your free book. You get to keep it even if you cancel the trial. If you don't want to be billed, you cancel the trial, you get to keep your book. So spread that link around if you've already cashed in. You can buy a shirt in our store, prowrestlingtees.com. We've got over 24 to choose from. And if you like what you hear every week, you can make a PayPal donation on solidmonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, the Chosen Son, Andre Smith, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Payback, Tejas Bagwat, Your Girlfriend's Crush, Gary Smith, Nemesis, Nathan Moyers, Thomas the Promise Murphy, and the Oak Ridge Oracle, Roman Lozano. And actually, we got one more that came in a little while ago, D-Train, Desmond McDade. Thank you for all of the support that you guys give, especially the ones who donate on a regular basis. It's just really cool to see that kind of support, that you like the show that much. If you want to get a shout out and a wrestling nickname, $10 or more, it's all you got to do. TheSolidMonster.com, click the PayPal button, and it will take you through the process there. I also have a fun announcement to make here. I'm very happy to be able to announce, as I did on Twitter earlier this week, that as part of our joint meetup, we're having, of course, a SummerSlam meetup August 21st. That's SummerSlam Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern at the KBH, which is one of the biggest and best beer halls in all of Brooklyn. It's only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center. We're all going to meet up over there and just kind of hang out and have fun for a few hours before the pay-per-view. And it's a joint event, Solid Monster Sounds Off and Mania Crawl. We're partnering up, and I'm proud to announce that on hand, as part of the event, we have added the legendary pro wrestling writer and photographer, Bill Apter. Bill Apter is going to be part of our SummerSlam meetup. He's going to be there. I mean, he'll be hanging out and mingling with everybody, but he'll be there selling and signing copies of his new book, which is called Is Wrestling Fixed? I Didn't Know It Was Broken. Clever title. And that book is out right now, by the way. It's going to be out on Audible. I just got done talking about that. The Audible version will be out August 16th, if you want to wait for that. But otherwise, you can get the book right now. It's up on Amazon. And, yeah, Bill's going to be mingling with everybody at the event and taking pictures, I'm sure. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you want to be part of this event, you have to – well, you don't have to, but I ask that you kindly RSVP. We have an event invite up on Facebook. It's not mandatory. You can just show up if you want. And if you're not sure, you can say that you're interested in going. Or if you want to go, just RSVP, let us know on Facebook so we can get a sense of headcount. That would be awesome. So I'm very much looking forward to that, and it's going to be a good time. The news got worse for Brock Lesnar this week. Came out that he failed a second doping test. This one for the... This was interesting because the first test he failed, I think they said it was back on June 28th. And Brock supposedly was tested 6 or 7 different times, and the other ones, he passed everything except the one on the 28th. And that may well be true, but the one that he took the night of UFC 200, which was July 9, he failed. And that makes 2 tests now that he's failed, at least that we know of. ESPN and the LA Times have reported the drug he failed for is called clomiphene. Supposedly, it's the same drug that John Jones flunked for that got him booted off the UFC 200 card. Clomiphene is an estrogen blocker. It increases your testosterone, if you're a male, obviously. When you're cycling on and off steroids, apparently a lot of guys will take estrogen blockers like this one. There's others as well. So unless Brock is having problems ovulating, it's pretty obvious, I think, what's going on here. He puts everybody in a terrible position. He puts himself in a terrible position because he had this great comeback story now that he's gone and fucked up. He puts UFC in kind of a tough position. I mean, I guess they just don't have to use him again, but I'm sure they would have loved to have gotten Brock back, maybe even for their Madison Square Garden show, their very first MSG show coming up. I think it's in November. I don't know if he would have been on that show or not, but I'm sure they would have loved to maybe have had him fight on that show and come back next year, do more fights. That's pretty much out the window, especially if he ends up getting suspended. And it puts WWE in a terrible position because, you know, they're going to look terrible if they don't take some form of action here. They look terrible if they don't suspend this guy. You know, I said on last week's show when the news first came out about that first test that he failed that, you know, hey, they should hold him to the same standard that they held Roman Reigns to. Because that, as far as anybody knows, would have been the first time, you know, if WWE honored it, it would have been his first wellness policy offense that anybody knows of. And you get 30 days for that. They could have suspended him. He would have been gone for a month. He would have been back just in time to do the match at SummerSlam with Randy Orton. And you just, you know, you move on from there. Just like Reigns. Reigns now is back. He's on the road this weekend. He's going to be at the pay-per-view in the championship match. So you hold him to the same standard. Now, you got to remember, it's not been publicly disclosed yet what he's failed for. This is just rumor. These are sources saying that, you know, supposedly he failed for this drug. It's not yet officially come out. And nor has he been suspended by USADA. That has not happened yet. So it could be a case where WWE just wants to wait, you know, just take any action. Hey, nothing's official. What are we suspending him for? Maybe that kind of thing. But the problem with that is that now they're in that 30-day window before SummerSlam, and you've got a second failed test. You know, one was bad enough. Now you got 2. And who knows? Maybe there's a 3rd. You know, this thing's not done yet. And I know it's not their drug policy, but if it comes out that he was taking this clomiphene and he doesn't have a medical exemption to do so, clomiphene is banned under WWE's own wellness policy. It is listed plain as day on the website as part of the policy is there for anybody who wants to go and read it. How do you not suspend him? But again, you do that now and out the window goes SummerSlam. And that's one of their big main events. And you know what? At this point, so be it. If that's how it has to be, then so be it. 2 failed tests. I mean, how do you not do something? How do you not set that example? How do you not send that message? I mean, they suspended Roman Reigns. That sent a pretty big message. Doing the same thing to Brock Lesnar, that would send one too. But again, I mean, it says it right there in their own policy. They have a whole section, anti-estrogens. And it says the non-medical use of drugs belonging to this class, including clomiphene, is prohibited. I mean, it's right there. Now, meanwhile, according to the latest Wrestling Observer, Paul Heyman's contract with WWE has expired. And the two sides, they have yet to come to a new agreement. It doesn't mean they won't. I would hope, I would think, that they're working on that. They better be. That's why I'm not like worried about this. I'm a big Paul Heyman fan. I'm not really worried about this. I think they'll come to an agreement. Everything will be fine. He's too valuable. He's too valuable, even if it is only a few times a year. He is too valuable to not have in the fold in some way. You know, like I said, even if it's only a few times a year, you can't have Brock Lesnar without Paul Heyman. Unless the plan is that Brock is just not going to do TVs anymore. I don't know that he's going to be on TV before SummerSlam. He may just show up at SummerSlam and wrestle. And if that's all he's going to do, then you know what? Yeah, I guess you don't need Paul Heyman. I still like him being out there. But if Brock's not going to be on TV, then sure, I guess you don't need him. But you would think at some point Brock is going to be on TV. Brock is going to have to say something. And that's where Heyman comes in. You need him. Heyman is the best in the business at what he does. There is no one better than Paul Heyman. And unless he himself does not want to come back, and I can't imagine why he wouldn't want to. I mean, I know he's got other things going on, his own company and everything. Unless he doesn't want to come back himself, in which case there's nothing you can do, they'll reach a deal soon enough. Because they have to. You can't let somebody like that just walk away. So with that out of the way, let's talk about this WWE draft. Apparently, well, first of all, I got to mention this first. Apparently, there was a fight backstage at SmackDown in catering between Sin Cara and Simon Gotch. No idea what it was about. I saw some mentions. I think it might have been someone on the MLW Twitter maybe who said that Sin Cara supposedly got the better of it. Now I saw that Simon Gotch got pulled from the house shows this weekend. Sin Cara, though, he's wrestling, so that doesn't sound too good for Gotch or Aiden English, who apparently was stuck doing singles matches. I said this on Twitter. If you're going to punish these guys, if they are going to be punished, you got to put them together, make them a tag team. Call them the Lucha Villains. Just if they really do hate each other, I don't know what this was all about, but if they do, if there's any animosity there, let that come out on TV. Let's see them have to team up together. I think that could be fun. The new general managers. They appointed new GMs on Raw Monday night. The new Raw general manager is Mick Foley, which I mentioned Mick Foley's name last week, but I mentioned it for SmackDown. I did not see that coming, that it would be Stephanie picking Mick Foley, given that every time I can remember seeing Stephanie or Triple H on TV with Foley, it was always against him and insulting him and slapping him and berating him. So I guess Stephanie is pulling out the old best for business thing by bringing in Foley as the GM. And I think Foley is fine. I think Foley is a good choice. He's, you know, well-liked. And I think maybe the biggest thing about it I liked is that it's a babyface, because I was convinced that Stephanie was going to bring in somebody and it was going to be a heel regime. And, yeah, you still have Stephanie there. I'm sure there'll be some of that. But she brought in a likable, fan-favorite personality, which I didn't see coming. And you have one on the other show, too. Shane McMahon revealed Daniel Bryan as the GM of SmackDown. So apparently they did spoil the surprise on their own website last week. Somebody had sent me that screenshot about them saying the Yes Movement comes to SmackDown, and then they quickly took it down. Well, the Yes Movement is on SmackDown. Daniel Bryan, I think, is also a great choice. Gives him something to do. The reaction he got and the Yes chant and everything, it's unbelievable. This guy's more over than almost everybody on the main roster who's active right now. I mean, the reaction he got had to make him feel good. So he's going to be pulling double duty, I guess. He's doing the commentary for the Cruiserweight Classic, which is, I mean, really, they tape like three times, and then they'll have a live show in September. It's not like a lot of work. Ooh, he's going to be on the road every week. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, he'll be on the road for SmackDown, but the Cruiserweight Classic stuff is easy enough. But I like Daniel Bryan, so the more I see of him on TV, you know, I got no problem with that. So I thought the announcements were fine. Obviously, I'm a little disappointed there was no Kurt Angle, just because I think him in that role, you know, drafting Brock, who ended up not going to SmackDown anyway, or drafting American Alpha and some of the interplay there could have been a lot of fun. But the format, let me talk about the format of this draft. I did not like the format of the draft. I was not a fan, and for two reasons. First of all, it just felt way too rushed. Like, the show went on the air on Tuesday. They had the podium set up with the commissioners and the GMs, and they just, like, immediately they went back and forth. Raw picks this person, SmackDown picks this person, Raw picks this person, SmackDown picks this person. It was like, whoa, like, slow down there a little bit. Like, let us digest this, or why not, you know, send the guy out or do an interview with some of them, do something. It was just back and forth, back and forth. They sped through those first five picks like you would think they were going off the air, and meanwhile, the show just started. So I wasn't really a big fan of that, but the biggest thing I didn't like about it was we didn't get any reaction shots. We really didn't. I mean, maybe there were one or two picks in there that when they made them, the guy was out there. I don't remember. I know Sami Zayn got picked after he got laid out like a schlub by Kane, but we didn't get any reaction shots. I remember the very first draft they ever did when they split people up, or when The Undertaker, remember Undertaker got picked by Ric Flair? How pissed off he was backstage. He was throwing furniture around. Now, you know, on the network, I know they had their draft coverage. And kudos to all of them. I was watching that. I thought they all did a good job. Renee Young and Booker T, Corey Graves. I'm a big Corey Graves fan. I thought that, you know, all that stuff was very well done. And occasionally they would interview somebody in the back. So there were some interviews. But, you know, so, and some of them, by the way, some of those interviews like Cesaro, which I'm going to talk about, and Del Rio, you could tell they had no idea where they were being drafted, and they were not very happy about it. You know, you could just read it on their face. They were not thrilled about the outcome of the draft for them. So if you would have taken some of that real drama, you know, and I'm not talking about like what they did with Jim Ross. It was like in 2008 or 2009. When, you know, basically just to fuck with him, like, I'm sure they got their kicks backstage, they drafted him to SmackDown, and then they put the camera right on him, right? I mean, that was a really dick thing for them to do. But I guess I'm talking about something along those lines where, you know, even if it's, you know, scripted or rehearsed or whatever, you've got guys in the back, and you just show their reactions, and some of them are happy, and some of them are not so happy. And maybe some of them march out there, and they confront the GMs. We got none of that. We really didn't. We didn't really get any of that at all. And you still could have saved, like, the other interviews for the network or YouTube. You could still do all of that. But I felt that this draft was really missing something. It was missing personality. We didn't get any of that. They also needed to do a better job of explaining what the hell is going on with all the titles. I think we can assume that they're going to be creating a new one for SmackDown at some point in the very near future, but they didn't say anything about that. Maybe they're going to wait and they're going to shoot an angle this weekend or at SummerSlam. We have no idea what's happening with the women's title. We have no idea what's happening with the tag team titles, both of which are now on Raw with the U.S. title. SmackDown has the WWE title and the Intercontinental title as of right now. And I guess Raw also is going to have a Cruiserweight title at some point. So, I mean, they really, for now anyway, you could always do trades in that and that kind of stuff, but you know, Raw, in that respect, I guess, is pretty stacked, but they didn't even hint about any of this stuff, not even a hint of what might happen. So let me just read through from last week's podcast. These were my top 10 picks for Raw from episode 450 of The Sound Off. I had Seth Rollins as the number one draft pick overall, and I had him going to Raw. I had Roman Reigns at number two, Bobby Roode at number three, Bray Wyatt at number four, Charlotte, New Day, Chris Jericho, The Miz, Sami Zayn, and Austin Aries. That would have been my top 10 for Raw. So I nailed 7 out of the 10, including Rollins as the number one pick. So that's not bad. That's not bad. Now, for SmackDown, my top 10 picks were John Cena, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Brock Lesnar, Finn Balor, Randy Orton, American Alpha, Sasha Banks, Kevin Owens, and Rusev. And those were my picks for SmackDown. And I got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, I guess Orton too, right? So that's 5. Well, I got half. That's not terrible. But I also had Corey Graves going to SmackDown to team up with Mauro Ranallo. I think they would still make a great team. And instead, they decided to take Corey Graves and put him on Raw with Michael Cole and Byron Saxton. And JBL is moving to SmackDown. He's going to be teaming with Mauro Ranallo and joining the... And by the way, what the hell did Mauro do to deserve that? And David Otunga is going to be joining them as the third man. which means that Jerry Lawler is off the main shows. And instead, what they've done is they're going to take Lawler, Lita, and Booker T, and they're going to put them on the pre and post shows. Now, I don't know if Lawler's going to be on, like, Raw pre and post or SmackDown pre and post. It might just be pay-per-views. I know Lita is moving into the, I think, the Raw and SmackDown pre-show stuff. So we've seen Lawler do a lot of that recently. This is not new for him. So it's really not that radical of a change. In a way, it's the end of an era, taking him off the main shows. Now him and JR are completely off Raw and SmackDown. So it's a little weird. But you know what? I'm sure it was in the works for a long time. I'm sure that even if he didn't get arrested, this was probably a move they were going to make, because they want to freshen things up. And I can't fault them for freshening things, or wanting to anyway, freshen things up. I mean, I'm looking, with Graves going to Raw, I'm looking at the bright side of this. Corey Graves is really good. I don't know that everybody listening to this has really been paying attention or watching NXT every single week, but I have. And Corey Graves is really good. And maybe David Otunga is really good. I will admit that I didn't really hear any of his work on SmackDown when he was doing it for that week or two. And I know he's been on Main Event. Is it Main Event or Superstars? So I'm not really familiar with David Otunga's work. Maybe he'll end up being a great announcer. Maybe he'll be the shits. I don't know. But I know that Corey Graves is really good. And I enjoy his work on NXT. And if he can bring that to Raw, and he can help improve the announcing situation on that show, which is god-awful, then it's a good move. Now, the other positive of this, at least on Mondays, is that our long national nightmare is over. We no longer have to listen to Maggle, Maggle, Ballgame Maggle. We don't have to listen to that shit ever again. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I have no idea how this affects the NXT announced team, if Corey Graves is staying on the show, if he's being replaced. I expect him to be replaced very soon. I can't see them keeping their lead color guy on Raw as a permanent announcer on NXT. Well, actually, I guess Byron Saxton would be the color guy on Raw, if we're being literal about it. So that's the announcer update. Round one. We're going to go through this whole thing here. Round one, the first pick of the draft went to Raw. Because, well, I mean, they never bothered telling us why the first pick went to Raw. I guess it's kind of like the Mets going to Wrigley Field to play the Cubs. You know, they're the visiting team, so they get to bat first. I mean, they could have offered some kind of explanation, but I guess that's asking too much. So Seth Rollins was the number one draft pick. He went to Raw. Dean Ambrose, the WWE champion, he went to SmackDown as their number one pick. So numbers 1 and 2 overall, respectively. But, you know, I want to talk about their matches. They had two matches on TV, two long matches on TV this week for the championship. And it's not very often that we get WWE championship matches on TV anymore, which I like. I think it's cool that when they do them, it means more. In theory, it means more. Apparently in the ratings, it didn't mean a damn thing because Raw fell off a cliff in the third hour. They had a 25-minute championship match, and it did not do well. People did not care. I don't know what that says about the championship. I don't know what that says about Dean Ambrose or Seth Rollins, but whatever it is, it's not good. But I thought the match they had was really good. In a lot of ways, it kind of reminded, and with the finish, the fuck finish that they did, it wasn't exactly the same thing, but it reminded me of the championship match on Raw in 03 between Triple H and Shawn Michaels. They had this long, just great world heavyweight title match. And Shawn super kicked him and fell on top of him. And Shawn's shoulders ended up on the mat. And Triple H's shoulders were on the mat. And effectively, they pinned each other. And everybody thought Shawn won the title. And the cameras, the sweeping crowd shots and people going crazy. And then Eric Bischoff, who was the Raw GM, he takes the title and he walks it over and he hands it to Triple H. And everybody boos and he announces that it's a draw. In the event of a draw, the championship stays with the champion. So they did a similar type of deal here. They had this long match. Rollins hits a superplex on Ambrose. Ambrose turns it into a small package. And the referee counts 3 for both of their shoulders. It was a lame finish to what I thought was a really good match. But I understand why they did it. They wanted to create drama heading into SmackDown. They wanted to create a situation where, well, who's the champ? Well, I can only give them so much credit, because that same night on the network, they were airing footage from after the show went off the air, and they just gave the belt back to Ambrose. They had Lillian Garcia make the announcement that in the event of a draw, the title stays with the champion, and they had the belt returned to Dean. So there really wasn't any drama at all. I mean, unless you just turned the TV off on Monday, and you stayed the hell off Twitter, and you stayed the hell off the internet altogether, then I guess you were in your little bubble. Maybe you didn't know what was going on. There was one person, you know, who, listening to the show, who tweeted me and said, "What the hell's going on? I thought Rollins was the champion when SmackDown came on the air on Tuesday." But otherwise, you knew what was going on. So how much drama did it really create? I'm not sure why they didn't just wait until SmackDown to make that announcement, but they have their reasons for why they do things. So the championship match they had on Tuesday, I didn't think it was as good. The thing about it is this. They have a pay-per-view tomorrow night. It's called Battleground. And it's going to be Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose yet again in the main event. This time they're throwing Roman Reigns in there with his new beard. I saw pictures of him from the house show last night. He's grown out a little bit of a beard. I guess that makes him look tougher. I don't know. But effectively, we're getting three championship matches in a week. In less than a week, three championship matches between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. That's too much. And you know, the story of the match on Sunday, it's not even going to be about them, because we've already seen the match twice. It's going to be about booing Roman. That's all that match is going to be about. And then the question of who ends up with the title. And, you know, I'll do my predictions in a little bit here. But I think it's overkill. I think it's just fatigue, putting those two guys in the ring back-to-back nights. You're going to do it again on Sunday. I don't think people want to see that. You know, because now you're going to get to the pay-per-view, and it's like, well, I've already seen this match twice. Who cares? That's the one thing about it I don't like. Number three pick overall was the women's champion Charlotte. That was surprising to see a woman that high up on their list. It was cool. I like it. But I didn't expect it. Number four overall, AJ Styles goes to SmackDown. And to me, that's a huge endorsement for AJ Styles. The fact that they would have him so high up in the draft. And I think it really shows the, you know, that they've kind of snapped out of it, and they've realized, holy shit, this guy's really good. We ought to do something with him. And just the confidence they have in him as the top guy. I fully expect, you know, on SmackDown, once they get their world title, I don't know if it's going to be in the next couple of months, 6 months, a year, but he's going to be the champion. Whatever they call that title, AJ will end up with the top title because, you know, he has to. Because he's probably the best they have on that entire brand. So I think it's just a matter of time. If you would have said to me, hey, AJ Styles is going to come to WWE, he's going to win the championship, I would have said you're out of your mind. Just the fact they would bring him in and let him keep his name, and that alone was surprising. But to see how well he's done, and now the kind of respect they showed him here, I think his coming to WWE has been one of the unexpectedly great stories of 2016 so far. Finn Balor, he went number five overall, so a pretty big endorsement of him. They'd take an NXT guy and put him in the top five. And I thought it was very interesting that of all the people that they announced in this draft, and they announced a lot of people, the ones that got the biggest reactions, I think, were the NXT people. I'm mainly thinking of Finn Balor and American Alpha. They got a huge crowd reaction when they got announced. So I think that's a good sign. I think it's a good sign that people are paying attention to NXT. They're watching the show on the network, and they like these guys, and they're going to get behind them. So I hope that's a good sign. Now, Balor, I will say, my first thought when he got drafted to Raw was that, okay, he's going to Raw to be the Cruiserweight champion. I don't know how I feel about this. Because Stephanie, on Raw Monday night, she announced that they're bringing back the Cruiserweight division, and that division is going to be exclusive to Monday Night Raw. So I think it would be a terrible idea if the plan was to put him in the Cruiserweight division, because I think he should be in the main mix from day one, and I suspect that he will be. I think my initial thought, hopefully, is wrong, because you know, you look at the posters and his positioning here. I saw the news, there was like a Raw graphic that had him as one of the main faces next to like Roman Reigns. I think they probably have the same idea. They've invested so much in this guy that they hopefully have more for him than just the cruiserweight division. But it worried me when I saw that, because he doesn't need to get stuck with that label. I know he's a smaller guy. He would fit in that 205-pound limit that they have for the cruiserweight division, but he's so much bigger than that. I mean, even the people that think, oh, he's boring, and there's a lot of people that don't like Finn Balor. I've heard from these people. He's boring. I don't get what people see in this guy. He's watching paint dry is more exciting than watching Finn Balor. I don't agree with that. I can understand people maybe not liking his promos. He's not the most exciting guy in the world, but I think he's a lot of fun to watch, and I just think that there's a lot of money in the guy. And you don't want to limit him by, and no disrespect to Neville, but you look what they've done with him by just turning him into another Neville. You know, Neville, former NXT champion, just like Finn Balor, and look, they haven't made him a top guy. So I'm hoping his positioning in the draft means that they're going to bypass the cruiserweight stuff and put him where he belongs. As far as this cruiserweight thing is concerned, maybe they explained it and I just didn't hear him, but because I tune the announcers out so often. But I don't know if they made any reference to the cruiserweight title coming to. I would think they'll obviously be a championship if they're going to have a division. I don't know that there will be a title until September after this cruiserweight classic thing comes to an end. But again, I don't know that they've explained any of this. I think that would make sense. It would make sense whoever wins the cruiserweight classic to send them to Raw. You know, you could even look, if they turn this thing into an annual thing, this Cruiserweight Classic, the prize could be a Raw contract to compete for the Cruiserweight title. That could be part of the deal. It's not just, hey, here's a trophy, you know, like they did with the Dusty Classic. I mean, that's fine, but I think there's got to be more, right? There's got to be more of an incentive, and I think if they're going to have a Cruiserweight division on Raw, you know, going forward, when you do things like this, you put a Raw contract on the line. That'll get people's attention. You know, that'll give these guys a reason to want to fight each other and get on TV. So that was the first round. Round two, they divided this into rounds here. Number six overall pick, Roman Reigns. Don't do drugs, people. I say don't do drugs. We still don't know what he failed for. I saw the item that it supposedly talk in the locker room is that he failed for Adderall, which I think is a drug for ADHD. I think it's the same thing Adam Rose got popped for. It's not like he was on fucking crack cocaine or anything like that, but still. Yeah, it's still a banned substance, right? So I joke with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has paid his penance. He is back now. I don't want to see him win the title this weekend, but he is back, as he should be, and now we can lay off the guy. So he's number six overall. Number seven, John Cena. Goes to SmackDown, no big surprise there. I guess, if anything, the only surprise was that he went at number seven and not number one or number two, number three. Number eight, Brock Lesnar. Again, no surprise. I figure he was probably way up there in the order, and then the whole drug thing happened, and they knocked him down a few pegs. Number nine, Randy Orton goes to SmackDown. So Brock goes to Raw, and Orton goes to SmackDown. So naturally, they draft them to separate brands. So Roman Reigns, John Cena, Brock Lesnar, and Randy Orton, all of them do not go until the second round of this draft. I don't know that anybody predicted that. Number 10 overall pick, The New Day, they go to Raw. So then we get to round 3. Number 11 pick overall, Sami Zayn, goes to Raw. Same Sami Zayn who got picked immediately for Monday Night Raw after being laid out in the previous segment, like a jabron by Kane. Just, I don't know. I don't know who thinks of these things. Number 12, Bray Wyatt goes to SmackDown. Number 13, Sasha Banks goes to Raw. And she got pinned on SmackDown. I think that's her first pinfall loss on TV, on the main roster. Which is interesting. You would think they would make a bigger deal about that. Number 14, Becky Lynch goes to SmackDown. I think that'll be good for her. Number 15 is Chris Jericho. He goes to Raw. So now we get into round 4. Number 16 overall pick, Rusev, the United States champion, goes to Raw. And number 17 overall, The Miz, The reigning Intercontinental Champion goes to SmackDown. So your Intercontinental and U.S. Champions go undrafted until the fourth round, and they end up being number 16 and 17 overall. So I think that says it all as far as your secondary belts are concerned. Number 18, Kevin Owens goes to Raw. Number 19, Baron Corbin goes to SmackDown. Number 20, Kaz and Enzo go to Raw. Number 21 overall, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, they go to Monday Night Raw. So we have AJ Styles on SmackDown, we have the Club on Raw, so the Club is no more. But these two guys now find themselves on the same show with Finn Balor. And I know WWE dropped the Balor Club trademark a while back, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to see a new version of the Club on Raw. They might even use that same name, which would be a sin because it sucks. But I mean, this. I look at this and I say to myself, this stuff writes itself. You know what I mean? Like, you give it a couple of months. I mean, you could do it any which way you want. You could even turn Balor heel. I wouldn't do that right, you know, straight away. But give it a couple of months. You somehow find a way to get those three guys together, right? Anderson, Gallows, and Balor, and you build to an eventual interpromotional match between Finn Balor and AJ Styles at next year's WrestleMania. Because who the fuck wouldn't want to see that match? I mean, the match doesn't even have to have a story. I think just as a match, it would be incredible. But on top of that, you can develop a story here. Whoever you want to be the babyface and whoever you want to be the heel. And I'm okay doing the Raw vs. SmackDown thing, but I would save it as a WrestleMania. And you don't have to have Raw vs. SmackDown up and down the card. You want to do a super card, go for it. But they've done that before, where at WrestleMania they had one, right? They had like an interpromotional Raw versus SmackDown special attraction match. That could be your special attraction match. Story writes itself. Number 22, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable of American Alpha, they go to SmackDown. And I don't know who to attribute this rumor to, but there was a rumor going around that the original plan, because the original plans for this draft did change for a whole host of different reasons, but one of the original plans was supposedly to draft Jason Jordan to the main roster and not Chad Gable. That the fact that they would even entertain the idea of splitting these guys up before they even get to the main roster just speaks to how batshit crazy they are. If it's true, and I don't know if it is, but if there are any reputable sites or sources that have reported that, I don't know what to say. That thought should not even come into their head. And I think Jason Jordan, one day, he could be a big single star. But guess what? I think Chad Gable can be a big single star as well. They're both awesome. It's not like, well, Jordan is so much more advanced than Gable. No, he's bigger. He's bigger, physically, he's bigger, but no. He's actually not. If anything, it's just the opposite. Jason Jordan was on NXT. He was a man. He was in a boat with no direction. He was sitting there in the boat. Didn't know where to go. He would go this way. Then he would change his mind and go that way. Because it didn't seem like they knew what to do with him. I remember when he came in, he had the big afro. He shaved the afro off. He changed his look a little bit. He was completely directionless. Didn't he have a partner before Chad Gable? I felt like he had was it Dillinger? I feel like he had a partner, a regular partner, I don't even remember now, before he finally settled on Gable. The point is, the guy wasn't going anywhere. They were trying things and it wasn't working. Chad Gable was the missing ingredient that made the whole thing click. And from day one, when I first saw Chad Gable, you know, this guy had that sense of humor, he had that charisma, there was something about the guy that reminded me of Kurt Angle, and it wasn't just the fact that, hey, he's an Olympian too. It was beyond that. And you know what? Especially early on in his career, that's not a bad person to either be modeled after or to be compared to, because Kurt Angle, when he came in, and his first full year on TV in 2000, Kurt Angle was the fucking man. And maybe Chad Gable's a little bit smaller than Kurt was, but Chad Gable is fucking awesome. And he has made Jason Jordan into something. I mean, he has elevated Jason Jordan's game. They both complement each other so well. When Jason Jordan gets the hot tag, this guy comes in a house of fire. I mean, he's like a totally different person. He's throwing guys around the ring like he's got the strength of 10 men. People are going crazy. His facial, he's a madman in there. So to have one without the other so early, to not even have them as a team on TV, I can't believe that was even a legitimate consideration that was given, because it's so fucking foolish. And if it was true, thank God they came to their senses, because now they're on the main roster. They could do the tag team thing for as long as they want to do the tag team thing for. And eventually the split will come, and I hope that both of them end up on the very top. Because I have high hopes for both of them. I think they're both great, and I think they could both be champions one day. That could be a WrestleMania match one day. Number 23, The Big Show, goes to Raw. Yay. Number 24, Dolph Ziggler goes to SmackDown. I saw an item this week where Kevin Nash has been pitching the idea that he wants to be a bodyguard for Dolph Ziggler. I feel like I talked about this idea once on the podcast before. I feel like Nash has been pitching this for years, and I'm pretty sure at the time I was not a fan of this idea, because my attitude has always been these guys, right, like a Dolph Ziggler, he don't need Kevin Nash. But the more I think about it now, it's been a few years probably since I last answered that question. It's probably been 3 or 4 years in all honesty. That's a lifetime in wrestling. And I look at where Dolph Ziggler is on the card now. And look, SmackDown does not have the depth that Raw does. Maybe Ziggler being on SmackDown will be the beneficiary of that. I can't even say that with a straight face. I just think back to what I thought when that Survivor Series ended and he was the sole survivor, and at the end of the pay-per-view, oh, this is finally it. They're going to do something with this guy. And they did nothing. So I have no reason to be optimistic that anything is going to change with this guy. The way I look at it is this. Who cares? Bring in Kevin Nash. Let him be his bodyguard. As long as I don't have to see Kevin Nash wrestle. Because Kevin Nash, he's a funny guy. He's a witty guy. You know, maybe he's trying in his head to recreate the whole Shawn and Diesel dynamic, and everybody compares Dolph to Shawn anyway. The guy's dressing up like Shawn. He's basically a fucking Shawn Michaels cosplay. You know what? You may as well do it. You may as well just get it over with already. Bring in Kevin Nash. Let him be his bodyguard. Let them do some segments together and be funny and be entertaining. And let him be out there. I don't know physically what he can do, but I'm sure he could throw a punch or a kick without hurting himself. As long as I don't have to see him in the ring wrestling, I don't give a shit. At this point with Dolph, who cares? It can only go up. So I'd be in favor of bringing in Kevin Nash as a bodyguard. Why not? He was entertaining enough with the paparazzi stuff he was doing in TNA, right? Could do the same thing here. Number 25, Nia Jax comes up from NXT. She will be on Monday Night Raw. Is she ready? Who knows? We're going to find out. Number 26, Neville, he goes to Raw. Number 27, Natalya goes to SmackDown. Number 28, Cesaro goes to Raw. I'm going to get to Cesaro in a little bit here. Number 29, Alberto Del Rio goes to SmackDown. Number 30, Sheamus goes to Monday Night Raw. So they went off the air, and they had the remaining draft picks on the network. So number 31 was the Golden Truth. They go to Raw. Number 32, the Usos go to SmackDown. So they could have some pretty cool matches, I think, with American Alpha. So probably the only two good teams on SmackDown. Number 33, Titus O'Neil goes to Raw. Number 34, Demon Kane goes to SmackDown. So at least they separated Kane and Big Show. I guess that's good. Number 35, Paige goes to Monday Night Raw. So they have split up her and Alberto Del Rio, and she's been posting all of these cryptic messages on her Twitter. I don't know if they broke. I don't even give a shit, but I do think it... I don't know what the mindset was in doing that. You know, if you know they're a couple, if you know they're in a relationship, you know, they kept a lot of the other couples together. Miz and Maryse are still together. Rusev and Lana. Jey Uso and Naomi. They split these two up. Not that they were on TV as an act or anything like that, but look, they could have easily kept them together, and they didn't. And I don't know if that has to do with, yeah, I read that it was Vince McMahon and Triple H who made all these draft pick decisions. It was on them, and Del Rio has had some very unfavorable things in the past to say about Triple H, and so who the hell knows? Maybe this was Triple H's way of saying, you know, sticking the knife in and saying, fuck you. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I thought that was very interesting that they would draft them to separate brands. And again, on the network, after the show, they interviewed Del Rio backstage. He wasn't even pretending to be happy about going to SmackDown. He looked like his dog. He looked like his perro died. That's what he looked like. Number 36, Darren Young and Bob Backlund both go to Raw. I'd rather take Bob Backlund over Darren Young, but no, that's fine, whatever. Number 37, Kalisto goes to SmackDown. Number 38, Sin Cara goes to Raw. And they had announced before the show even went on the air that they were splitting up. So we knew the Lucha Dragons were going their separate ways. We didn't know they were going to be on separate brands necessarily, but they did draft them to different brands. And what puzzles me about this is, I guess Sin Cara, maybe he makes the 205 weight limit so he can qualify for this cruiserweight stuff. But you're going to have a cruiserweight division on Raw and you move Kalisto to SmackDown? I don't understand the logic behind that. If anything, I would flip-flop, put Sin Cara on SmackDown and put Kalisto on Raw. But whatever, they have their, again, they have their own way of doing things. Number 39, Naomi goes to SmackDown. Number 40, Jack Swagger goes to Raw. Number 41, The Ascension. I know you're all very excited. The Ascension is coming to SmackDown. Number 42, the Dudley Boys go to Raw. Zack Ryder at number 43, he goes to SmackDown. Number 44, Summer Rae, she goes to Raw. Number 45, Apollo Crews goes to SmackDown. Poor Apollo Crews. Boy, is his stock falling or what? Apollo Crews, one of the big, you know, young up-and-comers from NXT, comes in. All this athleticism that this guy has. This guy's going to have a bright future ahead of him. And he might, but he gets drafted number 45. Look at all the people who got drafted ahead of Apollo Crews. What is the judgment, like in storyline, what is the judgment going on here with these general managers? Why wouldn't you want a guy like this in the third or fourth or fifth round? Why is he in round number nine? It doesn't make any sense. He is in the same, look at this. Apollo Crews was drafted in the same round as Zack Ryder, Summer Rae, the Dudley Boys, Mark Henry, and Alexa Bliss. And I love Alexa Bliss, by the way. Alexa Bliss was drafted number 47. She's going to SmackDown. Mark Henry's 46. He's going to Raw. Mark Henry may well be 46 years old at this point. I love how Mark Henry had done interviews talking about how, I'm retiring after WrestleMania. I'm not going to let Vince, like he did last time, talk me into another contract. And here he is. WrestleMania was in April. It's now July, and he just got drafted to Raw. So I guess Mark Henry is having one of those wrestler retirements. But yeah, Alexa Bliss is going to SmackDown. I'm very excited for her, very happy for her. Round number 10. Braun Strowman goes to Raw. Breezango goes to SmackDown. Bo Dallas goes to Raw. This was priceless. So they put the graphic up on the screen for the Social Outcasts when they had the number 50 pick. And Renee Young thinks that all three guys have been drafted to Raw. And then she quickly realizes that it's only Bo Dallas who's been drafted. And she just goes, and I quote here, "Oh, wait, it's just Bo Dallas." It's like, that might have been a worse endorsement than the one that Ted Cruz did not give to Trump the other night. It's like, "Oh, wait, it's just Bo Dallas." I think that, you know what? That could be the guy's next t-shirt. I think that should be his next t-shirt. Number 51, Eva Marie goes to SmackDown. Number 52, the Shining Stars go to Raw, where I'm sure they will burn. I was going to say burn bright, but we all know they're going to burn out. Number 53, the Vaudevillains go to SmackDown. So wait a minute, hold on a second here. So the Vaudevillains, that means Simon Gotch goes to SmackDown. And Sin Cara went to... Sin Cara went to Raw. They split him up. Fuck. I like my Lucha Villains idea. Anyway, the final round here. Round 11. Number 54, Alicia Fox goes to Raw. Number 55, Eric Rowan goes to SmackDown. So Rowan goes to SmackDown with Bray Wyatt, but Braun Strowman goes to Raw. So it would appear that for now the Wyatt family is no more after the pay-per-view this Sunday, or maybe they won't be. I mean, look, we still don't know what brand Luke Harper is going to when he comes back in a few months. You know, he was ineligible to be drafted, I guess, because he's out hurt. And we don't even know if Rowan is going to necessarily be with Bray. I mean, just because they're on the same brand does not mean they're going to be together. You know, they already cut this guy loose once before. Remember how well that worked out. Number 56, Dana Brooke goes to Raw. Poor Dana. So, at least she's still with Charlotte. Number 57, Mojo Rawley goes to SmackDown. And I guess, you know, Zack Ryder is on SmackDown, so I guess the two of them can continue to do their Hype Bros tag team. But I have to say something about, and this is nothing against Mojo Rawley personally, and maybe one day he's going to develop into a big star. Maybe he'll catch fire on the main roster. He never did in NXT. So I don't know why it would be any different on the main roster, but I wish him nothing but the best. But the idea that you have six NXT picks in this draft, and even that, we don't know. Who came up with that number? It's like, it's some arbitrary number. We saw a graphic on the screen one day that said, there will be six NXT picks. Who came up with that? No explanation, just a random number. But you have six NXT picks in this draft. You have four authority figures between these two shows. You have a commissioner and you have a general manager on each show making the decisions on who to draft, who they can grab to make the best roster they possibly can. Four people. And of those six NXT people that are being drafted, you draft Mojo Rawley over guys like Shinsuke Nakamura and Bayley. The fact that that could happen is completely fucking stupid. Just even from a, I'm talking like kayfabe storyline sense, it's completely fucking stupid. And it makes the GMs look completely fucking stupid. Now, if there's some sort of rule that prevented them from drafting those people, and it was never explained to us what that might be, you know, none of them are currently champions, which is why you notice I didn't mention Samoa Joe's name. At least he's got a title. Asuka's got a title, so I get it. It just makes them look inept. Unless they explain to us why they can't draft those guys, it makes them look inept. Especially, you know, Brian has been on record as saying, and WWE even, I think, has interviewed him and asked him, who's your favorite wrestler, at least a couple of years ago? Who's your favorite wrestler to watch in the world? You know what his answer was? It wasn't Randy Orton. It wasn't John Cena. It was Shinsuke Nakamura. So anybody who knows anything about that, if anybody hears that and pays attention, you've got Daniel Bryan as the general manager on SmackDown, all these picks that he made, and not one of them is Nakamura. It's not like Nakamura has a title. Like, in storyline, what would be the explanation? This guy has been booked as, like, one of the biggest stars in all of NXT. It's a happening when he comes out. The entrance, the music. It just... at least explain why certain people are not eligible to be drafted. Number 58, Curtis Axel goes to Raw. Number 59, Carmella goes to SmackDown. Happy for her. It's very cool, although she's on a different brand than Kaz and Enzo. I see people like making a big deal. They split them up. What do you mean they split them? But Kaz and Enzo have been on the main roster now for a few months. Carmella's been in NXT. It's not like they've been traveling together. Like, how is this any different? They'll be just fine. And poor Heath Slater. He went undrafted. They did a little comedy bit at the end of the show on the network where he's the only guy sitting in the back, all these empty chairs, the lights go out, and that's how they went off the air. So I thought it was funny. So, they were not part of this draft, but PW Insider did have a news item this week that Rhino, we just saw Rhino come back to NXT a few weeks ago, Rhino and Curt Hawkins are going to be coming back to the main roster, most likely on the SmackDown brand. There will be other names coming back. I know Ryan Satin had a story up about Jinder Mahal being in talks to possibly come back. Teddy Long on his podcast said MVP told him that he was on his way back. Shelton Benjamin's name has been mentioned. So we'll see. We'll see who else. I would imagine there'll be a few other people as well. I still say, though, for the Shining Star's sake, before they burn out completely, they need to get Carlito back. Whatever money he wants, give it to him, bring him in. And maybe it's not even worth it for that, you know, for a mid-card act to throw a bunch of money at him. And maybe Carlito just doesn't want to come back. You know, I mean, he's a bit of a loose cannon there. I remember when they brought him in to do the Hall of Fame induction for his father. And he was, you know, he gave the company some pretty good jabs there. I think Carlito's kind of in I don't give a fuck mode, which is what Bret Hart is in now. But Bret Hart has been retired for so many years. And Batista pretty much, I mean, if you think about it, he's, for all intents and purposes, he's retired. I mean, Carlito's still out there wrestling. He could conceivably come back, and this guy just doesn't give a fuck. I kind of like that. Yeah, I don't know if WWE would like that, but I kind of like that. But for the Shining Star's sake, they have to bring him back. Cesaro. Let's talk about the Swiss Superman here. Cesaro had a backstage promo. He was interviewed by JoJo about being drafted to Monday Night Raw. Cesaro was not selected in this draft until the sixth round. He was the number 28 pick overall. And he was not happy about this. Nor was he happy about going to Raw over SmackDown. This is what he said. He said, well, first of all, I'm not happy to be drafted 17th in the sixth round. I had a feeling I should have been drafted a little higher, hoping to be at least top 10. Just looking at the rosters and what the GMs talked about how SmackDown was going to be the wrestling show, all about the in-ring product, all about, when did they say that, by the way? All about the superstars, not necessarily about the GMs and all that drama. I feel like I would have been a better fit for SmackDown, but just like my career here so far, there's always stumble blocks I have to overcome. So JoJo then asks him, and JoJo looked really uncomfortable having to stand there and listen to all this, almost like she was saying, you know, hey Vince, don't blame me, I'm just doing what I'm told, you know, I'm just asking questions here. But she asked him for his thoughts on Stephanie and Mick Foley, and he sort of laughed, and basically, like in so many words, he didn't use these words, it would have been funny if he did, but in so many words, he basically said he didn't give a fuck about all that GM nonsense. At one point, he kind of stumbled over his words a little bit, and he said, well, I occasionally stumble over my words because I speak five different languages, but I prefer to speak the language of wrestling fans, of wrestling, I should say, that fans all around the world can understand. And he even mocked what Vince McMahon said about him on the Steve Austin podcast. He said, you'll see, I can actually speak. My brain is sending actual words to my mouth, and I speak them. He was not a happy camper. And, you know, why should he be? They care so little about this guy, they can't even be bothered to put his accurate statistics on the screen. Somehow, they mixed up Cesaro and Bubba Ray Dudley because they look so much alike. You know, unless Cesaro gained 40 pounds and 9 tag team titles and I'm not aware of, he ain't Bubba Ray Dudley. Or if he debuted in 1999. He must have been so low on the card, I didn't even know he was there. So now I see people debating, well, was this a shoot? Was this a work? Here's the answer. The answer is, regardless of whether it was planned or if it was unplanned, and that was his real, genuine, on-the-spot reaction, you know, maybe they have an idea for the guy, right? Maybe their idea, and then really, you could stop laughing right now. Maybe they have an idea for the guy, and they said, hey, you know, be honest and just say how you really feel. You know, it doesn't matter. Either way, I believe that that was absolutely 110% how the man honestly feels. There is no doubt in my mind about that, that what we saw there, what we heard there, is exactly how Cesaro feels. At no point did that promo feel forced. At no point did that promo feel rehearsed. You know, and it's not like he's the strongest promo guy they have on the roster. But it didn't feel that way at all. In fact, I think it was probably his best promo since coming over to WWE because it felt real. And WWE does not like to do real very often. Now the only question is, how many times does he get slapped by Stephanie on Monday? Because you know he will. Even if it's not this week, this fucker is going to get slapped. And slapped hard. There were actually, there were a few... If you're not like a network subscriber, I would say it's worth it to subscribe just for this. There were some incredible promos on this post-show. So Cesaro was one. Kalisto was the other. Okay, but each of them were incredible for very different reasons. Kalisto murdered his promo so badly, he would get the death penalty in 38 states. And it's not even legal in 38 states. Holy shit, was this bad. And he knew it. He knew it was so bad, he literally... not even joking, he literally ran away and shouted, God damn it. I've never seen that before. I've seen some bad promos. I've seen the video of the Jumpin' Jeff Farmer promo. Yep. I've seen that. I've seen Sid on live TV. Well, can I redo that? Well, it's live. You know, I've seen a lot of botched promos and bad promos in my day. I don't ever remember seeing somebody fucking up so badly they just run away and curse on the way out. I mean, here is an example, and I'm not a big fan of, like, overly scripting and stuff like that. Here's a case where scripting out the entire thing would have been an improvement. If anybody needs something like that, it's Kalisto. But I have to thank him because I was very entertained. But this was painful to watch. So I threw up a poll on Twitter when SmackDown was over. A little bit different because as a show, I mean, they had matches, but, you know, other than the championship match, who gives a shit? It was just a bunch. Nobody cared. It was all about the draft. It was all about the picks. That's what people were tuning in for. I mean, they had like a, they had one match. I don't even have the match in front of me, but it had like Rusev and Ryder and guys like that. SmackDown did over 3 million viewers on Tuesday. Actually, I think it might have either beaten Raw or it came very close to beating Raw. Believe me, SmackDown did not do 3 million viewers to go fucking see Zack Ryder in the ring with Rusev. Okay, that's not why it happened. So instead, I put a little twist on the poll here. And the poll question was this. After the draft, are you a Raw guy or a SmackDown guy? What do you think of the rosters? What camp do you fall into? We had almost 2,000 votes. 47% say Raw, 53% say SmackDown. And I was very surprised by that result when I first saw it, because to me, Raw has the edge over SmackDown. I wouldn't go so far as to say SmackDown was buried. I mean, there are people that are really thinking like SmackDown got just completely fucked over here. I don't think SmackDown was buried. I think they have a good roster of people on that show, and they have some new faces they can mix in now from NXT. And don't forget, they could always do trades. Something else that they said nothing about on this show, but they've done that before. They could do trades. But let's take a look here, okay? So I will give SmackDown that, but let's take a look here. First of all, Raw gets Corey Graves, and SmackDown gets JBL, okay? That right there gives Raw the advantage. Raw has the Cruiserweight division. We don't know when, but Raw is going to be getting the Cruiserweight division. SmackDown has, well, we don't know what SmackDown has. SmackDown has nothing right now, but it also has one less hour than Raw does, and I personally, I look at that as a plus. The tag team division on SmackDown, when you get past American Alpha and maybe the Usos, that tag team division, right off a cliff, okay? The Vaudevillains, the Ascension, okay? That's not a tag team division. I think they have Breezango, and I'm a big Tyler Breeze fan, but I, you know, Breezango, honestly, like, they're not a top-tier tag team. They're just not. And so I look at that division, and I just kind of shrug my shoulders like, well, all right, well, American Alpha and the Usos will have some good matches. Unless you're going to do a best of 27 series with them, that's going to get old real fast. So then you look at the women. Raw has the champion, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Nia Jax, Paige, Summer Rae, and Alicia Fox. And then you have Dana Brooke. Okay, we'll throw her in there too. SmackDown has Becky Lynch, Natalia, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, and Carmella. And then you have Eva Marie. We'll sneak her in there too. So, actually, you know, Eva and Dana, they kind of cross each other out. When you really look at this, you know, Raw only has one woman more than SmackDown does. That's actually not too bad. That's actually not too bad. So, all right, you know, the women's situation is actually not as lopsided as I thought it was. You know, I'm happy to see Alexa and Carmella come up to the main roster, but I think the women's division as a whole, like if everybody I just mentioned was on the same show, that'd be a pretty damn good women's division right there. But they sliced it in half. So the idea of having separate titles for each division of like five people or six people, I mean, I know the NXT tag team division, just using that as an example. Okay, American Alpha, they're pretty much gone. So what are you left with? You're left with the Authors of Pain, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, The Revival. I guess the Hype Brothers are gone. Take them off the list. So you look at the NXT tag team division. I guess if you want to put Blake and Murphy in there, I don't know what if they're together this week or they're broken up again. Let's put them in there. That's like four teams in the NXT tag team division. So it's not as though that we haven't seen this before in WWE, but still, I mean, to have a women's division, and let's say they get their own title, and you've got like four or five women, that's not really much of a division. You know, it's like the whole some of their parts is stronger than the individual parts. That's absolutely the case here, I think, with the women. Unless they have Charlotte as like the traveling champion, or Sasha, whoever ends up with the belt after SummerSlam, and you have to think Bayley is going to be coming up to one of the brands. I don't know why I keep thinking SmackDown. I could see her ending up on SmackDown. That would even out the rosters if Bayley came up. But then again, Sasha's on Raw. So how do you work that? Being that Bayley didn't get drafted, if she's going to come up, she almost has to do something initially with Sasha. Maybe not wrestle her. She could be her partner. she could, you know, be in her corner to counter Dana at SummerSlam. She could come up to just have a quick face-to-face with Sasha and tease the eventual match, but she would have to be on Raw to do that, so I don't know how they worked that out. But when you really look at all the women together, they've got a lot of good ones. It's just, I question splitting them up like that. So you look at the show side by side, Raw and SmackDown, they're actually a lot closer, I think, than it seems to most people. I don't think that the disparity between the two shows is as great as some people are saying. I mean, Raw definitely has the edge, but it wasn't a blowout. I wouldn't call it a blowout by any means. Battleground is live tomorrow night, Sunday night, from Washington, D.C. Going to run through the card here, make some quick predictions. We'll start from the bottom, work our way up. The Usos and Breezango has been added as a kickoff match. I'm going to go with the Usos. At least I would go with the Usos. The Usos, I think, have a lot of potential to go up against American Alpha, so I don't know why you would have them lose to Breezango. Unless Breezango's suddenly getting some big push I'm not aware of. I think the Usos should win here. Chris Jericho will have Randy Orton on the highlight reel to talk about Brock Lesnar taking anti-estrogen block. Well, I'm just kidding. Actually, it'd be kind of funny if Orton did talk about him taking estrogen blockers. I don't think he will say anything about that. I would. Hey, if I'm facing Brock Lesnar, I want to get under the guy's... Actually, first of all, I would never fight Brock Lesnar. I would not want to do anything to get under the man's skin. But if I did, I would imagine that talking about that would be one way to do it. So if Randy Orton has a death wish, he'll bring that up. Natalya and Becky Lynch. I'm going to go with Becky Lynch. The New Day against the Wyatt family. Six-man tag team match. I assume this is non-title. The Wyatt family, I feel like I've said this so many times before. The Wyatt family needs a win. The Wyatt family needs a win. But yet, Braun Strowman will no longer be part of the Wyatt family after Sunday. So does it even matter? Again, we don't even know if Eric Rowan is going to still be with Bray. They'll be on the same brand, but so what? What does that mean? They didn't get drafted together as a package like all these other teams did. They probably are split up. So if the Wyatt family is being split up and the New Day are your tag team champions, it probably makes sense for the New Day to win. So I don't know what the fuck is going on here, but I'm just going to pick the Wyatt family because these guys need a win. You know? I can't remember the last time they actually came out of a big feud or like a big six-man feud winning. I can't even remember. So I'm going to go with the Wyatt family. Rusev and Zack Ryder for the United States Championship. I'd keep the title on Rusev. He is awesome. The Miz against Darren Young with Bob Backlund for the Intercontinental title. I think it would be cool at some point for him to get the championship. I wouldn't give it to him in his first big singles match. I know one of the ideas I floated for his debut was maybe him coming out and winning the title, but that was more to kind of make a splash in his debut. Now he's finally on TV. Now, okay, they're going to establish the character in some other way. I don't think you need to rush into it. I don't think you need to rush into putting the title on him. Maybe you save it for SummerSlam. I would have The Miz go over here. I would drag this out a little bit more, have Bob Backlund get up in Darren Young's face in the next few weeks, start smacking him around, talking some sense into him. You got to train hard. You know, you could do all the training vignettes and stuff, and then it builds to the big championship win. So I'm going to go with The Miz. We have Charlotte and Dana Brooke against Sasha Banks and a partner of her choosing, which I think the partner ends up being Paige. It could be Bayley. You know, I'd love to see Bayley on the main roster, but I would be just as happy if they saved her for after her match at TakeOver with Asuka, and they have her come out on Raw the next night. The last we saw Paige, you know, she had a title match, I think, against Charlotte. That was the last big match on TV I can remember her being in, and she was up against Charlotte, and she was getting screwed over by Dana Brooke, and it was actually Sasha who came out after the match to even up the odds. So it would actually make storyline sense for it to be Paige. And I know there I go using that word again, and I know I should know better than to use that word. I know. So Paige is going to be my prediction, and I think that if she is, I think Sasha and Paige get the win. We have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in what I think should be, and it's probably too late, I guess, for them to add this because you would want to build it up, but they could do whatever they want. I would have added a Loser Leaves Raw stipulation back on SmackDown, you know, after we knew what brands they were going to. You know, I would have added that stipulation. Loser leaves town. You know, the loser has to get booted from Monday Night Raw, go to SmackDown or something, and send Kevin Owens to SmackDown. I'd have Sammy win. And I just like Owens more on the SmackDown roster for some reason. I had him earmarked for that roster. They put him on Raw. I would send him to SmackDown. You know, I think it's a big enough grudge match that you could argue adding a stipulation like that. Well, this place isn't big enough for the two of us. And Sami Zayn was on TV saying, hey, we might be drafted, and either way, this has to end, right? That's what we kept hearing him say. This has to end. This has to end. And so for that reason, I would do it here. I wouldn't necessarily wait until SummerSlam. I guess they could. But I think a match like this, you know, deserves a stipulation like that. And that way, you keep these guys apart for a while after this match. And I think it's going to do a world of good, because you're going to revisit this at some point. You know, this isn't the last time you're going to see these two go one-on-one. But it's almost like Orton and Cena in a way, except I could actually tolerate this match. You want to keep them apart for a while. That could be a year. That could be 2 years. So that way, when you come back, it'll be even bigger. And hopefully by then, there'll be a title involved. So I'm picking Sami Zayn in this match. Even if Owens doesn't go to SmackDown, I'm picking Sami Zayn. John Cena, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass against AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Carl Anderson. And given that they are splitting up the club, I can envision a finish where they lose, and maybe there's a miscommunication, leads to a loss. I'm sure it'll end up being Gallows or Anderson. Carl Anderson seems to be the go-to guy when it comes to getting beaten. So they could lose, and then you could do like the not-so-amicable parting of the ways after the match. It's like, how the hell? Maybe they don't beat down AJ Styles, because that would almost turn him babyface. But, you know, they just kind of walk out, and that's how things are left with the club. Things are left in distress. I'm going with Cena, Enzo, and Cass to win this match. And then we have the main event, Triple Threat, for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Or I guess now it's just the WWE Championship. Dean Ambrose defends against Seth Rollins yet again. And Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is back. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of crowd reaction. Gee, I wonder what crowd reaction. Well, I'm sure Roman will be beloved in Washington when he walks out. I think that these guys are going to have an excellent match. I've wanted to see a Shield triple threat. It's kind of been overshadowed by the whole Roman suspension and everything. And they didn't save it for a big show like SummerSlam or WrestleMania. But this is a match I've wanted to see for a long time. And we're finally, this is the first time that we're getting a triple threat with these guys. And I think it's going to be excellent. I don't want to see Roman Reigns get the championship back yet. Not in his first match back. I think that would be ridiculous. Unless he's going heel, which he's not. So I think Seth Rollins is walking out with the WWE title. I think they're getting that title off SmackDown. They got to bring it back to Raw. And if you're going to do that, it's got to be Roman or Seth. And I think it's better to put the title on Seth, your number one draft pick, and let Roman have to, you know, work his way back up. Because we know he's going to get the championship back at some point. You don't have to give it back to him right away. So I think Seth Rollins is going to worm his way out of this with the championship. He gets the win. And that's your battleground card. On papers, yeah, some good matches there. There's some pretty good matches there. I want to talk about this WWE lawsuit that became a big story this week. Over 50 ex-WWE wrestlers, and I use that term loosely for some of these people, they are listed as plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit against WWE. They're claiming the company, quote, deliberately hid from them medically important and possibly life-saving information about brain injuries and neurological conditions such as CTE. The lawyer is rounding up wrestlers for this lawsuit. It's the same lawyer that was involved in a lot of those other concussion lawsuits, many of which have since been dismissed, much as this one will be, I'm sure. I'm not going to read every single one of the 50 names to you, but these are the ones I think most of you will recognize and the ones I want to mention here. First of all, Road Warrior Animal, whose brother, of course, is John Laurinaitis, Johnny Ace, who still works with WWE. He's sort of the lead plaintiff in this suit. Superfly Jimmy Snuka, whose wife signed on to the suit on his behalf. Hell of a thank you to Vince McMahon for keeping him out of prison all those years ago, which is where he should be right now. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, Chavo Guerrero Sr., and Chavo Jr., who, it's been pointed out by many, is part of this lawsuit and yet actively wrestles for Lucha Underground, which still allows chair shots to the head. So explain that one to me, other than dollar signs. Brian Clark, a.k.a. Adam Bomb, Kamala, is part of this lawsuit. Ahmed Johnson. Yeah, this one just kills me. So Ahmed Johnson, who is not exactly known for being the safest guy in the ring to work with and probably injured himself more than anybody else. It says in here that he sustained numerous injuries during his WWE career and was known for performing suicide dives, which required him, mind you, to go through the ropes onto the floor, sometimes landing on his head. Well, you know what, you big dummy? Who told you to do that? I don't think Vince McMahon went up to Ahmed Johnson and said, hey, you know what you ought to do tonight? You ought to do a suicide dive. You better do a suicide dive. Like, I can't imagine those conversations happening. And I don't know if he was doing that kind of shit on the indies before he came to WWE when he was Tough T or whatever the hell his name was. But you know what? If you're going to do a suicide dive and land on top of your head, it's your own fucking fault. And how do you not know at 265 pounds that hurling your body out of the ring and landing on your head is probably not going to be good for your long-term health? Because that's part of the whole suit. The company hid the dangers. They hid the dangers. He needed somebody to tell him that throwing his body out of the ring and landing on his head was probably going to fuck him up down the road. So I find that hilarious. Not the fact that apparently he's suffering, but just that he would think that, I find that hilarious. So we have Dave and Earl Hebner. And I will say this, you know, Earl at least did take some pretty nasty bumps over the years. You got to go back and watch, and I know I've mentioned this before, you got to go back and you have to watch the Beware of Dog match. That was the pay-per-view where the power went out, and it came back on just in time for the main event. It was Shawn Michaels against the British Bulldog. And near the end of that match, you got to watch the part where Earl Hebner gets knocked out of the ring by the Bulldog. My God, you got to watch that bump. I don't think he even touched the ropes as he went flying through them. And also, you know, one of the sadder things to come out of this, if you read the lawsuit, and I got to give a shout out here to Chris Harrington at Mookie Ghana, who went through the whole lawsuit and he was uploading pieces of it for people to read on his Twitter page. One of the sadder things to come out of this is we learned that Dave Hebner, so Earl's twin brother, he was a referee for a while. He worked for many, many years backstage in WWE as a road agent. And I think he's been retired now for a number of years. Just in the last 2 years, Dave Hebner was diagnosed with dementia and Parkinson's disease. And so that's terrible. There's nothing funny about that. That's just terrible. King Kong Bundy is part of this lawsuit. Ken Patera. Sabu. Now, on Twitter, and it's Sabu, so who the hell knows? But on Twitter, Sabu claims that he has no idea why his name is listed in this lawsuit. He says, I am not suing WWE. That's what he says. And I certainly hope that's true, because the idea that Sabu is now suffering from cognitive difficulties and mood swings and all of this lasting damage when he spent years and years and years abusing his body in Japan, in an FMW, and then an ECW. And even still to this day, he wrestles on the indies, taking bumps and chair shots and all that stuff. That he would even blame WWE and try to get money out of them is insulting. It really is. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm crying for the big, you know, billion-dollar company. It's insulting, though. And this next one really bummed me out when I heard it. Axe and Smash of Demolition. Which makes me very sad because it means we can pretty much forget about a Demolition Hall of Fame induction. And I talked about the Hall of Fame before, and what does it mean? What does it not mean? I'm coming at this from the personal perspective of somebody who's a Demolition fan, who really just wanted to kind of see them back in the family and hear the music again. And I just watched a shoot interview, an hour-long shoot interview with them that Devin Nicholson did. Really, really good. Again, go on YouTube. I highly recommend you watch it. They come off as just, you know, a couple of nice guys. They tell a lot of stories. It's a shoot interview, but they're not really shooting like hard on anybody. They're not bashing people. It's a really, really nice interview. And you know, I'm puzzled, but I'm not puzzled, because when you have a class action suit like this, you have a lawyer who says, hey, you can get some money out of this. You know, you guys work that daily grind of 280 days a year, 300 days a year. You should get in on this. You know, I don't know what their financial situation is, you know, but I can understand why it would be kind of alluring to get in on that. It's just very disappointing to see their name attached to this. And like I said, as far as a Hall of Fame induction and them coming back into the family and all that, maybe posthumously, but it ain't happening anytime in the near future. In the same vein, the Powers of Pain, Barbarian and Warlord, they're part of this lawsuit. The Berserker, John Nord, Shane Douglas, Muhammad Hassan, Henry Godwin, Mark Jindrak, Marty Jannetty, Heidenreich, remember that? Michael Cole sure does. One Man Gang, The Reverend Slick, The Natural, Butch Reed, Rodney Mack and Jazz, who were husband and wife, Sylvain Grenier, Jim Powers, Outlaw Ron Bass, Don Leo Jonathan. And if you're asking, well, who the hell is Don Leo Jonathan? He was a pretty big name back in the day, but not in WWE so much. He worked for the company less than a year. And apparently now he is so crippled up at 80 years or 80-something years old, he blames Vince McMahon for all of his woes. The estate of Axel Rotten is part of this lawsuit. And Mantar, fucking Mantar, is part of this lawsuit. Actually, you know, he may be the only guy with a legitimate case to go after Vince McMahon for making him wear that stupid costume. So, that's not all the names. That's a good number of them. I'm sure you probably recognize most, if not all of them. Look, Vince McMahon is no saint. Not even close. He used to take those guys and put them on the road and just treat them like pieces of meat. That schedule was inhumane if you go back 30 years. But they kept working for him. And they kept coming back. They would leave and they would come back and they would come back and they would come back. And Road Warrior Animal, being the lead plaintiff in this thing, the same Road Warrior Animal who used to stiff the shit out of guys in the ring. And I mean, they built their reputation on that, of beating the crap out of people. Whether it was enhancement guys or whatever, it doesn't matter. Now complaining about all the injuries that he suffered. The same Road Warrior Animal who will now sue WWE for not looking out for the health and for the well-being of the talent, but will beg for a job as a trainer at the Performance Center. This is from a podcast interview that he did just last year. Okay, not even a full year ago. He was on a pod, and I'm sorry I don't have the name of it in front of me, but he was on a podcast. And this is part of what he said. He said, I'm not going to spin my wheels and beg to go to WWE anymore. I'm not doing that. I've asked long enough with my brother working there and not getting a positive response. I've never burned a bridge with WWE, so I'm tired of trying, to be quite honest. It's such a horrible place to work with people who just do not give a shit. But damn it, how dare you not give me a job? I guess he finally decided to burn that bridge. It's another cash grab. That's all this is. It's another cash grab. You know, I talked to one former WWE star who thinks this suit is complete horse shit, and I'm going to have him on the podcast in a few weeks because he's all fired up. He wants to talk about this. This among other things. So we'll get him on. Lance Storm is another. And it's not him, the person I talked to, but Lance Storm tweeted out, he goes, and Lance Storm, it's funny because I love Lance Storm. And in his career, he was never known for being a humorous guy, right? He was always just very straight-laced, if I could be serious for a minute. And I laughed, actually, when he posted this tweet. He just said, got indigestion this morning, maybe I should sue WWE, you know, because I ate their catering for years. Hashtag stupid lawsuits. And you know what? And I'll just end with this. The sad part about, well, I mean, this entire thing is sad, but the really sad part about this lawsuit, the lawsuit does also raise the issue of the independent contractor classification in WWE, which is something WWE should be challenged on. And they kind of were once before with like, I think it was Raven and Saturn, and it just didn't go anywhere. But I mean, like, really, they should have to answer for that. But this is not the lawyer to be bringing that case against WWE. You know? This guy has a website up. I didn't think this was real. Somebody sent this to me. The lawyer or the law firm has a website that they created. It's called WWEConcussionLawsuit.com. That's the URL. WWEConcussionLawsuit.com. They've got a message on there. Are you a retired WWF or WWE wrestler with long-term health issues? You may be entitled to compensation. So I can do the commercial for them. And it does. It reads like an infomercial. That's what it reads like. And they're offering a free consultation. So there may be even more names added as time goes on. More people who want to get a piece of the pie. And look, I'm sure that the piece of the pie that the current wrestlers get from WWE, unless you're one of the top stars, you've got all these t-shirts, you're probably doing very well for yourself. I'm sure overall the piece of the pie that they get is just minuscule. Like, I'm talking like current talent compared to like profits and all the money this company makes. I would be curious. I'm sure it's listed. It's a publicly traded company. I'm sure, you know, somebody knows the answer. Maybe they could fill me in on this. What the total amount in the millions is that they dedicate to compensation for the talent. I'm willing to bet it's probably not a very high sum. So believe me, there's a lot of things you could say about WWE, and I'm not going to sit here and be the big defender, except that I think this lawsuit is complete bullshit. And I think that, you know, the end result here will be the same as it was with all the other suits that this guy brought against the company, or most of them anyway, and that this thing is going to get thrown out. This thing is not going to go anywhere.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Before people ask, you know, where is the Raw review? There really was nothing to say about Raw this week. I think we covered all the important stuff with the draft. The only thing to talk about would be Stephanie McMahon constantly interrupting Shane because, I guess, even verbally, God forbid, anybody should get the better of her. She's like an annoying child who always has to have the last word. It's just, it's infuriating. It's infuriating to watch. Other than that, I have nothing else to say about Raw. NXT. NXT opened with Samoa Joe, the NXT champion, in a, I believe, non-title match against Rhino. Pretty basic stuff, nothing overly special. And Joe won with the Coquina Clutch. The Authors of Pain against American Alpha. American Alpha was coming out. The Authors of Pain attacked him from behind. Alpha ended up wrestling anyway. They had a match. American Alpha did for the Authors of Pain what Kaz and Enzo did for American Alpha on their way out of NXT. They put them over. They did the honors, making them look strong. One of the more impressive things I have to say that I saw on TV all week of all the wrestling I watched was Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, both of them, throwing these two giant men around the ring, like with overhead belly-to-belly suplexes, just throwing them around like they were nothing. I mean, it's one thing, you watch Jason Jordan do it, and it's very impressive. Then Chad Gable, who's a lot smaller than Jason Jordan, comes in and does the same thing to a guy that's twice his size. That's pretty damn impressive. And it just goes to what I was talking about earlier when I was putting over American Alpha and talking about you can't take one without the other. They're both equally great, and they both have big things in their future. Just because one looks different and one's bigger, who cares? They're both awesome. And they both deserve a shot on the main roster. So they were throwing around the Authors of Pain. Authors of Pain did get the win, though. Clean, in the middle of the ring. They pin Gable with their side Russian leg sweep into a clothesline combo. Still no explanation from Paul Ellering about anything about these guys. He just kind of stands there. He has yet to say a word. Hideo Itami. We saw a promo for his return. It's coming in 2 weeks. Yeah, I feel like Itami may have missed his chance. You know, I have no doubt in my mind he was going to be the one getting that NXT championship match in Japan at Beast in the East against Kevin Owens and probably beating him for the title with the GTS because they were building the GTS too. He was always teasing it and you knew at some point he was going to hit it. I mean, I saw him hit it at the San Jose show WrestleMania weekend last year. But that wasn't a, and that was in the opening match against Tyler Breeze, but that wasn't a televised show. Clearly on TV, they were eventually building to him hitting the move, and it would have made sense in Japan, in the main event, using the move for the first time. He wins the championship. It would have been this huge celebration. It would have been unbelievable. But he got hurt. He got hurt 2 months before. And now they've brought in all this other, not even Japanese talent. They brought in just a ton of talent, but including from Japan. Because at the time, Itami was like the big Japanese import. And now they've got a whole bunch of different people. You know, they've got Nakamura, who's a bigger star. They've got Kota Ibushi. They've got Asuka doing her thing. And, you know, that Tozawa, it looks like maybe coming in. And I'm sure they're not the only ones. And so all of a sudden, it's like, is this guy even going to get a chance? You know, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I remember the video package. They had like cameras following him around over WrestleMania weekend last year. We got to see his kids wrestling around. We got to know a little bit more about Hideo Itami and actually care about him. And you wanted to see him succeed. You wanted to see him do well. I still do. I just think it's a valid question. Has his opportunity, has his window closed? And are they going to put the focus back on him the way they did before? You know, I do think a strong style match. I mean, both these guys are known for their kicks. I think a strong style match between Itami and Nakamura could be a lot of fun. Probably not for the two of them. But I think for us, it could be a lot of fun. Patrick Clark. Tough enough, Patrick. Made his NXT debut. I don't know what the hell he was wearing. It looked like a bald eagle had some rainbow ices and threw up all over him. Austin Aries kicked his ass. He tapped him out with the Last Chancery. No Way Jose came out. He ran out. He went after Austin Aries for what Aries did to him a few weeks ago, and Aries got the hell out of there. Bayley and Nia Jax was the main event. Nia Jax did a jackhammer on Bayley in this match. Only got a near fall out of it, but I thought it looked great. I think that move suits her very well. Hell of a lot better than whatever her finish is. What is her finish now? A leg drop? A leg drop is her finish. That leg drop crippled poor Hulk Hogan. I say use the jackhammer, right? Unless Goldberg's coming back. Well, maybe he is. He may well be coming back. You know, if this were Lucha Underground, Goldberg would come back. He would go to NXT and he would spear the fuck out of Nia Jax. Thankfully, they don't do that here. Bayley won with a belly to Bayley off the middle rope. We are headed clearly for Bayley and Asuka at TakeOver. It's going to be weird having Bayley lose twice, especially, you know, they're doing this whole redemption storyline. Bayley got hurt, you know, the worked a knee injury, and she's been fighting her way back, and she's beaten all these people, Alexa Bliss, and now Nia Jax. And for her to just go to TakeOver and just lose again, I don't know. It would be an unsatisfying conclusion, I would think. Because I would think, if anything, Asuka may be the heel going into this, and Bayley is going to be cheered like crazy. And again, they're going back to Brooklyn. You know, Bayley had her big match with Sasha last year. There's no way Bayley is going into the Barclays Center and getting booed. You know, unless she is going to win the championship back and they're just going to keep her in NXT, which I think would be foolish. So that was NXT. Cruiserweight Classic. This was episode 2. We had Tajiri representing Japan against Damian Slater representing Australia. Tajiri is 45 years old and only looks slightly older than the last time I remember seeing him. So he won with a buzzsaw kick. You know, good match. TJ Perkins from the Philippines against Damac from Germany. Damac calls himself the Urban German. And I can't say that or hear them say it without thinking of the Urban Sombrero from Seinfeld. It's just weird. I hear that and that's what I think of. So Damac is, I'm sure, Webmaster Mike's new favorite wrestler. He dresses like Michael Jackson. He does the moonwalk like Michael Jackson. If he was representing Michael Jackson in this match, he didn't do a very good job because he lost. They also made a comparison at one point to Alex Wright, another dancing German. When the announcers start comparing your career to that of Alex Wright, probably not a good sign. So TJ Perkins was the real star here. He's awesome, and he won with a knee bar. Lince Dorado representing Puerto Rico against Mustafa Ali representing Pakistan. This was the best match on the entire show. I thought both these guys looked great. If I remember, I think Mustafa Ali was the one who got hurt at the tapings in this match. And if I had a guess, you know, it wasn't like he was carted out or anything like that, but I think the injury may have happened. There was a reverse Hurricanrana late in the match where he got spiked right on top of his head, and it looked like no fun. He did. He finished the match. In fact, I think he busted out a Spanish fly off the top rope after that. But Lince Dorado won with a shooting star press. I thought this was great. And the main event was Akira Tozawa representing Japan against Kenneth Johnson representing the USA. They told us before the match that Kenneth Johnson had a stuttering problem his entire life. And for this tournament, he spent the last 6 months trying to get it fixed. And now he doesn't stutter, or at least he can speak for longer periods of time without stuttering. That's pretty cool. See, what he should have done is he should have asked Bubba Ray Dudley for advice. One day, you know, Bubba was on TV stuttering, and then the next day he was fine. I think Devon smacked him in the back of the head one day, and he was cured. So this was really, really what this was a showcase for Tozawa. Tozawa got the win with a deadlift German suplex. It's so weird to see guys winning with German suplexes when they're treated most of the time as just another move. So we have Tajiri, Tozawa, and Ibushi have all qualified for the next round. The Japanese, man, they're taking over. So this Wednesday, it's going to be Zack Sabre Jr. making his WWE Network debut against Tyson Dukes. Drew Gulak. I saw Drew Gulak. Actually, you know what? I saw Drew Gulak and Zack Sabre Jr. It might have been against each other, now that I think about it, on the last independent show I went to, which was a few months ago. And here they are. They're going to be on the WWE Network this week. So Drew Gulak is kind of like a throwback. I don't think he wears any knee pads or elbow pads. He just kind of goes out there. He's a very technically sound wrestler. And I could see where maybe that might turn off some people. But you'll see him next week if you're not really familiar with him. He's very good. And he'll be in there against one half of the Bollywood boys, the brothers that are in this tournament, Harv, Shira, Anthony Bennett against Tony Nese, and Raul Mendoza against the Brian Kendrick. So those are the matches coming up next week for Episode 3. I thought it was another strong showing for Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan, the best announced team in WWE, almost, you know, overnight. They just have this nice chemistry that they've developed, and I really like Brian. I got to tell you, I like Brian as an announcer and how excited he gets. And it'll probably be even better next week because, you know, Kendrick, if you watch the Bracketology special, Kendrick was on and him and Kendrick were talking, and they were talking about how their very first match was against one another. So he will bring that perspective to the match next week. It'll probably just make it that much better. I saw in the latest issue of The Observer, Cedric Alexander, Grand Metalik, Kota Ibushi, and Akira Tozawa have all been offered contracts by WWE. They haven't signed the contracts per se, but the offer has been made to each of them. And you know, as the main roster continues to pick off more and more of these NXT guys, they need to refill the tank, so to speak. So it makes absolute sense that they would try to grab some of these guys. My only suggestion here, they need to add TJ Perkins to that list, because that man deserves a contract. Lucha Underground. This is it. This was the third and final part of Ultima Lucha Dos. I thought it was a really good show. It was a lot of fun. The only truly great match was the main event. But they did set up a bunch of stories for next season. They did kind of move things forward in that way. The Vampiro Pentagon vignette that opened the show, it was like Pentagon walking into a cave, a dark cave, and having to fight off all these other Pentagons. I like that a lot. Vampiro tells him to find the darkness within, and so Vampiro now going forward, Pentagon Jr. is no more. He is now Pentagon Dark. We had Aerostar Drago and Phoenix against Johnny Mundo, PJ Black, and Jack Evans for the Trios Tag Team titles. Aerostar Drago and Phoenix are your new champions, and Helico returned. We haven't seen him in a few months and really never got any explanation why. And now we know why. Apparently he was taken out by Johnny Mundo because he was on crutches, and he went right after Mundo. Mundo was on the top rope. He hit him with the crutch a whole bunch of times, cost him the match. That allowed Phoenix to hit the Phoenix Driver to get the pin. And Phoenix becomes the first person to ever hold the Lucha Underground title, the Gift of the Gods title, and the Lucha Underground Trios titles. So, this thing was all action. I liked it a lot. Black Lotus and Dragon Azteca Jr. was the worst thing on the entire show, but that's, I'm not saying it was bad. All I'm saying is, compared to everything else, this was the weakest thing on the entire show. It only went like 3 or 4 minutes. Pentagon Dark came out. He broke both of their arms. He then cut a promo in Spanish. He is one of my favorite promo guys now in all of wrestling, even though all of his promos are in Spanish, but we have English subtitles, so it's cool. Pentagon says he doesn't want to wait for Matanza. He wants the title match that he's due right now. And so that was the way they explained the championship match being in the middle of the show instead of saving it for the end. And honestly, you know, by the time the show was over, it was pretty obvious why they did it this way, because they had to. I thought this match was a big letdown. I didn't think it was all that good. I expected more. Pentagon did kick his ass. I mean, there was a lot of ass kicking going on here. It was mostly coming from Pentagon. First time we've really seen Matanza beaten down this badly. And, you know, even though this was the first appearance of Pentagon Dark, and in his very first appearance, he lost. So despite that, though, despite the fact that he did not win the championship, he came out of the show looking stronger than, I think, pretty much everybody else on that roster. Because, first of all, he's fucking cool, right? That's just all there is to it. Fighting off dudes in a cave, the dark gear now that he's wearing. He comes in, the first thing he does, he breaks two arms, because one is not enough. He breaks two of them. He has a championship match. He kicks the champion's ass for 95% of it. And at the end of the show, he leaves a guy laying literally in a pool of his own blood that he drinks. He drinks the other man's blood. You know what? That's how you keep a guy strong. But he did lose. Vampiro got up from the announce booth. He gave him a barbed wire bat to use. Dario Cueto interfered. The bat ended up being used on Pentagon. And Matanza hit the Wrath of the Gods and pinned him. Vampiro got in the ring after Pentagon shoved him away. His master. Did I just call him master? His master. Not his master. Oh, boy. I think this heat is getting to me. And shoving him away is not the worst thing, by the way, that would happen to poor Vampiro on this show. Taya and Ivelisse, they had a good match. Lights went out in the middle of it. Ivelisse was going for the pin when they came back on. Katrina was in the ring in her wrestling gear, which we have never seen her wear on this show. And she laid out Ivelisse. The lights went out again, and when they came back on, Katrina had teleported herself very quickly into the balcony. Taya hit a Northern Lights suplex into a double standing double foot stomp, got the pin. I am very glad to see Katrina in the ring. When I interviewed her, if you remember when I interviewed her on the podcast, I asked her about getting in the ring. Hey, are you going to wrestle? Do you want to wrestle? It's not something we've seen her do in Lucha Underground, and she said she wanted to. I think her exact words were, "I'm getting feisty." Well, here she is, and they've clearly set up for a match with her and Ivelisse next season. After the match, Katrina teleported back into the ring. She told Ivelisse, "Death comes to everyone, even you, bitch." She not only gave her the lick of death, she rubbed Ivelisse's face in her cleavage. And all I'll say is that the writers of this show know their audience. I will say that. They know their audience very well. Prince Puma and Rey Mysterio. And by the way, challenged everybody listening. See if you can come up with a name for that move. We have the lick of death. But the whole cleavage rub. Let's see if we can come up with a name for that. I'll start. First thing that pops in my head. Breast in the World. That would be my suggestion. Now I leave it in your good hands. Prince Puma and Rey Mysterio. This was a match of the year candidate. This was awesome. This was just outstanding stuff. Honestly, I think it's the best Rey Mysterio that I've seen probably since his feud with Chris Jericho. And that was in, let's see, he had the feud with Shawn in 08, so this would have had to be 09 because it was right after that. So, what, 7 years? And I'm not saying that Rey Mysterio hasn't had good matches in 7 years. But he was in and out for so long with injuries. He'd come back, and then he was gone again. He would come back, and he was gone again. I can't think of anything after that that really stands out to me, except for the spear that Roman Reigns gave him that 1 year at Survivor Series. That was pretty wicked. Ray hit a reverse Rana at one point from the top rope on Puma. Puma, he rotated so much that he landed on his feet. So I assumed, oh, wow, he landed on his feet. What's he going to do? And then he just kind of fell down. So he sold it like he was dead. So that was kind of a botch, but, you know, still very impressive to see them pull that move off. But, I mean, these guys pulled out everything in this match. It was awesome. Ray got the win with the springboard Hurricane Rana. They hit a million moves here. I thought going into it, you know, like, surely Prince Puma, he's the heir apparent to Rey Mysterio, and it's going to be like a passing of the torch, and he's going to win. But as the match was going on, like, and the announcers made mention of how aggressive, like, uncharacteristically aggressive Prince Puma was being, I kind of realized, I think Rey's probably going to win this thing. And he did leave Puma in the ring. He left, even though he won, and he said, no, you stay. And he let Puma soak up all the cheers, so Puma was the last one in the ring when the show ended. You need to track this match down if you didn't see it. It's worth going out of your way to watch. So Matt Stryker is giving us the big send-off from the announce desk at the end of the show when Pentagon Dark returns. He hits Vampiro from behind with the barbed wire bat. He super kicks the shit out of Matt Stryker. All of Pentagon's kicks, they sound like shotgun blasts. And I used to think that it was sound effects they added in, like in post-production. And now I'm not so sure. I think he's just like really, really good at making his kicks sound ridiculously, unrealistically loud. So Vampiro bladed. Pentagon used the bat to slice him open some more. Threw him in the ring. He licked Vampiro's wound. He licked Vampiro's blood multiple times. "Your blood feeds me," he said. "Comida," which I know in Spanish means food. See, I'm getting better at this. Anyway, the blood stuff grossed me the fuck out. Not that he was bleeding, but anytime, and I've seen Mil Muertes did this in the Grave Consequences match, which I loved. But he did the same thing in that match with Phoenix, where he was biting the wound. I mean, Phoenix's face is full of blood. He's licking the blood. Pentagon took it to another level here. I mean, he would lick it. He would wipe it on him. He would go back and lick it again. I can do without that. I could do without that. But he left Vampiro bloodied and beaten in the middle of the ring, and they cut to Dario Cueto in handcuffs being escorted into a police van. And we get a shot of him grinning. And that's how we go off the air. That's how season 2 comes to an end. And they say, to be continued. I was kind of bummed we didn't get one of those long videos. Remember last year they did that video where every big star, every story, they kind of had a different scene that they shot. I think King Cuerno drove off in like a Cadillac or something. I mean, Dario Cueto and Black Lotus were on the run. It was like all of these things were going on, and it got you really hyped for season 2. And they didn't do anything like that here. It was just, you know, Dario grinning and... And that's fine for me, I guess, because, you know, I like that whole storyline, the whole Dario police stuff. I want to see where this thing is leading to. Obviously, he has a mole on the inside. Well, I guess Lorenzo Lamas. Lorenzo Lamas is his mole. We need more of Lorenzo Lamas next season. And so ends the Lucha Underground reviews for the next, I guess, whatever, 6 months or whatever it is. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, you could email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We have an audio question. We haven't done one of these in a while. We have an audio question from Jason Kaiser in Juneau, Alaska.
Yo, Solomonster, what's happening? It's Kingpin Jason Kaiser from Juneau, Alaska, dropping you a line. I recently came across a video with Paul Heyman. Might have been on one of his one-man shows he had recently. But he was weaving this intricate conspiracy about what might have happened that night between Brock Lesnar and Undertaker at WrestleMania 30, about what if Brock Lesnar just wanted to take it. And it occurred to me, I had an epiphany, Paul Heyman is perhaps the greatest storyteller in professional wrestling history. Now that's just my opinion, but I want to hear yours. Who do you think is the greatest storyteller in professional wrestling history?
Mine is the same as yours. I'm with you. Nobody does it better than Paul Heyman. In terms of actually going on TV and telling a story, I'm not talking about telling stories in the ring, like working a match. Heyman would be at the top of my list. And right behind him is Mick Foley, which is another reason why I don't mind him at all being the Raw GM. And I think if he starts getting into it with some people, and maybe Foley starts cutting promos when he gets pissed off and stuff, because he still has that, you know, he's got that knack. I mean, now we're talking promos, not so much telling stories. But that guy could tell a story, and he's done it as three different personalities. I mean, Cactus Jack in ECW, he would tell stories. Mankind, remember the sit-down interview he did with Jim Ross, how great that was. And even just as himself, just as, you know, Mick Foley, we've heard him go on TV and tell stories where you're just kind of hanging on this every word that this guy says. I would put Jim Ross in there as well. He's on my list. Nobody told better stories on commentary to help get those big-time matches over and get people over the way the JR did. And if we are talking great storytellers in the ring, or greatest storyteller in the ring, my vote goes to Bret Hart. At least in WWE, I don't think there was anyone better at it than he was. Byron from Carmel, New York. When and why did Val Venus become the big Valboski? Also, seeing his work in this era, do you think that Val would have been more successful if he debuted during the Ruthless Aggression era? I'm pretty sure that I think the whole big Valboski thing had to do with them toning the product down a little bit from the Attitude Era stuff. It's kind of like why he wasn't badass Billy Gunn. Now he was the one. Remember that? He was the one, Billy Gunn. So I think that's really what it was. As far as, like, would he have been more successful in the Ruthless Aggression era? I mean, probably not. Probably not. I think he would have had the same level of success. You know, Val could go in the ring. I know he wrestled in Mexico, I think, before he came to WWE. But, I mean, in that era, he would have been up against guys like Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho and Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle. You know, he had a pretty successful run in the Attitude Era doing the porn stuff. I don't know that he was going to really get any higher than that. I mean, literally now he gets a lot higher than he ever did before. That's all he does. But I don't think on the card he would have gotten any higher had he come in, you know, let's say, 4 or 5 years later. I think he would have missed his window, quite frankly. But I do have to say, I want to give him props for this. I'm not even not giving him props, but I want to mention this. He will forever have my respect for taking that splash from Rikishi off the top of the steel cage at that Fully Loaded show in 2000. That is one of the all-time WWE highlight reel moments. And for whatever reason, and his sons, Rikishi's sons work for the company, so I don't understand it. They never show that moment. I feel like they never show it. Maybe on some DVD or something, like every once in a blue moon we'll see it. I haven't. But they never show it. They never acknowledge it. I see them do all these highlight reel packages, and I see the same stuff over and over and over again. But they never show that one leap. And the you know what the sad part is? That wasn't even the finish. How can that not be the finish? How is that not the finish of that match? Anyway, much respect to Val for taking that move. You're a braver man than I. Max from Wellington, New Zealand. I would love to know your favorite It's So Bad That It's Good wrestling theme song. Mine happens to be RVD's TNA theme. The beat was so laughably bad and the lyrics were just as awful. I always got a kick out of listening to it and its many parodies on YouTube. I've actually grown to like that song, but the lyrics really are terrible. It's like, Van Daminator, Van Terminator, Van Assassinator. What the hell's an assassinator anyway? Is that even a word? So that's a good one. Does Brie Mode count? I still love the ending from one of the Botchamania videos. And I think it's up. I think this ending is actually up as a clip on YouTube, where the aliens from the movie Mars Attacks, it's like the final scene or one of the final scenes of the movie, I think, where the aliens are about to, you know, go after this old lady. She's sitting in a chair. She's got her back turned and her headphones in, and she can't hear what's about to happen. They're going to blast her with their big laser gun or something. And just as they're about to attack, I think the plug gets pulled out, and I guess you hear what she was listening to, and it's Remote! And all the aliens, like, they can't breathe. Their heads start to explode. Literally, their heads explode. And I remember the first time I saw that, I almost pissed myself laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing. I still go back and watch it every now and then. It's fucking hilarious. You know who I gotta go with? This would be my pick. I'm gonna go with Billy Gunn. And Billy Gunn has had many theme songs, from the Smoking Guns, you know, the Bang Bang. and he had the Rockabilly song. Remember Rockabilly? Shout out, by the way, to the person who sent me that illustration of Brock Lesnar's punishment after his drug test failure, where they're going to make him Brockabilly. I thought that was very, very cool. But Billy and Chuck, all these different songs. It's the Ass Man theme, though. It's the Ass Man theme from the Attitude Era. It's such a stupid fucking song, but yet I can't help but listen to it. I mean, and I brought up the lyrics here. Okay, when I put your question in my list here, I have the lyrics open. I pulled up the Ass Man lyrics. I want to read some of this to you. These are the lyrics to this song. This absurd song. This is like the Attitude Era in a nutshell here. I'm an ass man. Yeah, I'm an ass man. I love to love him. I love to kick him. I love to shove him. I love to stick. What does that even mean? I love to stick him. I don't even know what that means. Love to flaunt him. I love to watch him. I love to pick him. He loves to pick asses. Okay. And I'm going to kick him because I'm an ass man. So many asses, so little time. Only a tight one can stop me on a dime. I'm a lover of every kind. The best surprises always sneak up from behind. Yeah, tell that to Michael Cole. Buns of glory, buns of steel. Your lies won't give away the truth of how I feel. Oh, it's getting deep now. You walk behind me. I feel the heat. That's why the girls don't walk behind me down the street. I mean, this is a stupid fucking song, okay? It really is. But when you listen to it and the beat and everything, I think it's catchy. So I'm going to go with Billy Gunn. I don't know what's worse, me reading those lyrics or the lyrics of that stupid Layla theme song all those years ago. That's a bad song. That's not so bad it's good. That's just bad. That is a horrendous piece of music that should be burned and never played again. Isaiah from Philadelphia. I was wondering if you knew anything about British Bulldog's trapdoor injury. I heard you mention it when you were talking about Owen Hart staying with WWE after the screw job, and I always wondered, what were you talking about? Well, when Bulldog was wrestling for WCW, there was a pay-per-view. I think it was Fall Brawl. I could be wrong, but I think it was Fall Brawl. And Bulldog landed on a trapdoor that WCW had installed in the ring. I guess it wasn't visible to the wrestlers, or the Bulldog forgot, or whatever happened. He landed, he got slammed or whatever on the trap door. And the purpose of the trap door was to allow for the Ultimate Warrior to make his appearances, because he would appear in like a puff of smoke. He would be under the ring. And he landed on that door, and he ended up suffering a spinal infection. And it almost killed him. Now, look, his body, I'm sure, was a wreck before this, and he was probably all drugged up. I mean, God only knows, he had his problems, and he wasn't in the best of shape probably at that point. But after that, it was, I mean, far worse. I mean, it was really like life or death. And then WCW, on top of that, they sent him a letter in the hospital firing him. What a swell company. Aaron, also from Philly. A lot of Philly fanatics out there. Was watching the last episode of WCW Nitro last night, and there was a tag match for the Cruiserweight Tag Team Championships that had Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio. Rey did not have a mask on. I don't remember this at all. Why and when did he take his mask off? It was in 99. And it was either a singles match with Kevin Nash or a tag team match against, I guess it would have been the Outsiders. Because I know Nash was in the ring when Rey took the mask off. And, you know, why did it happen? It happened because WCW was stupid. That's why it happened. And then when he came to WWE with the mask on, they were smart enough to put the mask back on him. They made millions of dollars in merchandise money off of it, which WCW never did. Ryan from Baltimore. I was watching an episode of WWF Mania from 1994 at the WrestleMania 10 Fan Fest, and I wanted to know, were you there? Yes, I was. I don't know if I was on that show, but I was definitely at FanFest. I didn't go to WrestleMania for whatever reason. I don't know why. It was in the same building, like, the next day. But I got to meet a bunch of people there. I got to meet Vince McMahon, Shawn Michaels, Tatanka, Luna Vachon, Nikolai Volkoff, Lou Albano, Fred Blassie, Earl Hebner tried to smother me in the ring. I remember trying to climb to the top rope. I was determined. My mission was, I'm going into the ring. I'm climbing up to the top rope. And I got to the second rope. I got scared, and I climbed down. So, good times. I've got a bunch of pictures up on my Facebook page of, like, all of this. They're in the... If you're friends with me on there, they're in the photo album called The Secret Files. So you can check them out there. Luke from Arizona. Buy or sell on who you would have... Who you would have made the face of the cruiserweight division. Neville or Ricochet? Oh, I'm buying on Ricochet. I'm selling on Neville. I'm buying on Ricochet. Look, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys, but I think Ricochet has a lot more appeal. I think he's crazier than Neville. That guy's going to be the face of NXT when he's free to sign with them, whether it's next year or the year after that. Believe me, he's coming in, and you can make him the face of that entire brand. It's just a matter of time. And finally here, Tejas from India. Buy or sell on which was the bigger achievement, the Ultimate Warrior ending Hulk Hogan's reign or Brock Lesnar ending the Undertaker's streak? I'm buying the streak, and I'm selling on the Warrior. And the way I look at it is this. That streak thing was just a shocking moment. And that streak thing and the fan reaction is going to live on for years and years and years and years and years. And they made a lot of money off of that. They turned Brock Lesnar into this unstoppable monster. He became the champion. It actually led to something. But it was a big, memorable moment. And so was Warrior beating Hogan. I'm not saying that wasn't big and that wasn't memorable. It didn't necessarily lead to anything great. I mean, Warrior had the title. He didn't do overly well. If he did, they would have kept it on him. I think the idea at the time was, we're going to create a new star. Hogan's going to become kind of like what John Cena now is becoming. And a year later, Hogan was back on top winning the championship. So the experiment failed. But if you compare the two moments, you know, nobody had beaten The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And The Undertaker had beaten 20 people. Without a single loss. Storyline-wise, they turned that into a huge deal. And it became the draw. I mean, it really did. It became an annual draw at WrestleMania. Who's The Undertaker going to face? It's going to be the streak is on the line. Warrior and Hogan was a big-time match for its time. But, you know, it wasn't this sustained draw, this big attraction that the streak was. And Hogan getting beat, I'm sure it surprised a lot of people, but it also wasn't the first time Hogan was beaten, right? Because Andre had beaten him. Now, it was the first time that Hogan lost clean and got pinned clean in the middle of the ring. That didn't happen too many times over the course of his career. But certainly not in that era. It was pretty remarkable to see that. But I just think in terms of, you know, as a shocking moment and as a memorable moment... And you say the bigger achievement. So Warrior won the championship in the main event of WrestleMania. You would think, how is that not a bigger achievement? It's a big achievement. But I think the streak thing and what it did for Brock, go, you know, long term, like in the year, 2 years after that, even today, right up until today, it meant more. It meant a lot more to Brock and what they've done with him. So that's why I'm going to give it the edge. You know, I'm going to give the edge to the streak, and I'm going to sell on. I'm going to painfully sell on WrestleMania 6. That was one of my favorite moments growing up as a kid, and I grew up a Hogan fan. But I have fond memories of that match, and I'll tell you something. Even looking back on it now, Hogan versus Warrior. I mean, the match they had was the best match you could have asked for, because that thing could have been a disaster, like their match in '98. But the match at WrestleMania 6, if you haven't seen it in a long time. I mean, look, it's not a fucking, a G1 climax match, but I think it's actually pretty good. I think you'll enjoy it if you go back and watch it. So that's going to do it for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solemonster. We'll have a poll up after Raw Monday night. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Don't forget, RSVP if you think you might be able to make it to our SummerSlam meetup. Sunday, August 21st, 2 p.m. at the KBH Beer Hall in Park Slope in Brooklyn. It's only a few blocks away from the arena, and we'll all walk over there at about 6 o'clock or so. We're going to have Bill Apter, the legendary Bill Apter of Apter Mag fame. He's going to be there. He's got a new book. You can get copies of the book. The audio book is coming to Audible on August 16th. But Bill's going to be joining us. He'll be at the meetup and taking pictures and hanging out with everybody. It's going to be really, really cool stuff, and I hope to see as many of you there as possible. The invite's up on our Facebook fan page. You could probably find it on the sidebar if you scroll down and RSVP and let us know if you think you can make it. So with that out of the way, we will be back next weekend for episode 452 as this machine rolls on here. I want to say thank you to everybody who has made this show a big success and continues to support the show each and every week, whether it's just by listening, if you're making PayPal donations every week, if you're buying t-shirts, if you come into the meetups, all of that stuff. You can support this show in so many different ways. Just keep listening. Listen in iTunes, and then another week, maybe listen in Stitcher and leave us reviews there. We're a 5-star rated podcast, so you can really show your support in a multitude of different ways. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, because there's going to be some fun stuff going up there in the next few weeks, and I'll leave it at that. So until next weekend, be well, stay safe, enjoy Battleground, have yourselves a great week, and we'll see you right back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got 3 black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. No, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, right. Those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.